Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's Castle Report. Today is Friday, August 4th, 2017, and on today's report, I will be talking about a lawsuit that was filed on June 27th, 2017, by Sarah Palin against the New York Times for libel. The case was filed in the Southern District of New York, assigned to Judge Jed Rakoff, who has been on the federal bench since he was appointed by Bill Clinton in 1996. Judge Rakoff, by the way, went to Oxford University and then to Harvard Law School. The New York Times, the Gray Lady. I've always thought of it as the best newspaper in the world. I have had home delivery of the Times for many years. The masthead of the Times says everything. Quote, all the news that's fit to print, end quote. It's right there on the upper left column of the paper. It has been synonymous with the Times since the beginning, all the news that's fit to print. But according to Mrs. Palin and her legal team, and by the Times' own admission, as we will see later, this time they printed something that was not fit to print. The June 14, 2017 edition of the Times carried an editorial on its opinion pages entitled America's Lethal Politics. The point of the article was to put forward the argument that political rhetoric from certain people was responsible for inciting political violence, such as the violence that wounded Representative Gabby Giffords and killed six people in 2011. The article was written shortly after the attack on a congressional baseball game that wounded Representative Steve Scalise. A quote from the Times editorial provoked Mrs. Palin to action. Quote, was the attack evidence of how vicious American politics has become? Probably. In 2011, Jared Lee Loughner opened fire in a supermarket parking lot, grievously wounding Representative Gabby Giffords and killing six people, including a nine-year-old girl. At the time, we and others were sharply critical of the heated political rhetoric on the right before the shooting. Sarah Palin's Political Action Committee circulated a map that showed the targeted electoral districts of Ms. Giffords and 19 other Democrats under stylized crosshairs. But in that case, no connection to the shooting was ever established, end quote. So with one brief paragraph, the world's best newspaper basically accused Mrs. Palin of inciting mass murder. Well, it turned out that no connection to the shooting was ever established because there was no connection to the shooting. Mrs. Palin's electoral map had nothing to do with the shooting. The Times apparently knew that. Jared Loughner was apparently a very disturbed man who had a personal fascination with Representative Giffords, which was not connected to her political views in any way. The Times quickly figured out that they had published something that they apparently knew to be false, because 2 days later, on June 16th, they published the following, quote, correction, quote, an editorial on Thursday about the shooting of Representative Steve Scalise incorrectly stated that a link existed between political rhetoric and the 2011 shooting of Representative Gabby Giffords. In fact, no such link was established. The editorial also incorrectly described a map distributed by a political action committee before that shooting. It depicted electoral districts, not individual Democratic lawmakers, beneath stylized crosshairs, end quote. Well, the correction was too little too late for Mrs. Palin, who apparently decided that enough was enough. She contacted her lawyer in Tampa, Florida, who together with a New York firm filed suit on June 27th, alleging libel and slander. But Mrs. Palin is obviously a public figure, and the law holds that in order to recover for such offenses, a public figure must prove actual malice. What is actual malice? Well, according to Black's Law Dictionary, it is, quote, the deliberate intent to commit an injury as evidenced by external circumstances, end quote. So the defendant, or the one who defames what could be termed, has what could be termed a qualified privilege to defame public figures. The public figure, on the other hand, must overcome that privilege by proving actual malice, defined as the intent to cause harm. Mrs. Palin then must prove not only that the Times statement was false, that the Times knew it was false, but also that the Times, by making the statement, actually intended to harm her. Her complaint alleged that she suffered extensive harm in her personal and professional life. It led to the end of her position as a Fox News political commentator, influenced her decision not to run for president of the United States, tainted her personal and professional image. It will take her years to overcome the allegation that she had influenced someone to commit mass murder. The complaint states that she was a convenient target for the Times' attacks against conservative policies and a subject likely to spark readership interest. The real case involves the discovery process. Does the evidence of her allegations exist within the minds of Times employees and in their internal documents? Will Judge Radoff allow her to, quote, discover this evidence if it exists? It is highly likely that she can only prove actual malice by discovering information revealed by Times employees by word of mouth and through internal documents. To that purpose, then, her lawyers filed a request for the deposition of 23 Times reporters, editors, and employees. In addition, they asked for every document that had mentioned her since the incident in 2011. The Times lawyer, in response to this request, told the judge that the statement was, quote, an honest mistake, which was quickly corrected. A motion to dismiss the complaint was filed at the same time as the opposition to discovery request. Mrs. Palin is obviously trying to prove more through discovery than that these Times people didn't like her, as the Times alleged. That's right. The Times lawyer said she didn't like them, and that was why she filed this lawsuit. She is trying to prove that they intended to harm her, and through doing so, she would establish the basis for recovery, i.e., actual malice. But more importantly, she would prove to the world, once and for all, that what the New York Times really thinks about all those rubes out there in flyover country. In Mrs. Palin's mind, there is more at stake here than just herself and her lawsuit. For those reasons, discovery is vital and probably fatal if not allowed. My prediction all along has been that the judge would allow the depositions, and then he would decide one by one if the testimony was relevant and should go to the jury under the age-old rule that the law favors more information, not less. However, I was wrong in my prediction. Judge Rakoff blocked the discovery and said he would decide by the end of this month whether or not to dismiss the complaint. Appeals from the Southern District of New York go to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, which also sits in New York City. The Times argued for dismissal of the case, stating that she has no case because she cannot prove malice. The plaintiff's lawyers argued that the Times knew the information was false, but did it anyway to drive web traffic to their online services, using Mrs. Palin's reputation to do so. In other words, they acted with reckless disregard of whether or not they injured her, or with actual malice, if you will. This could have been, and still might be, one of the most important cases to come along in a long time, if only we could learn what is in those internal documents and what all those reporters who are so very hostile to her and her views really have to say about her. The world needs to know, but Judge Rakoff says no. Anyway, who would ever believe the New York Times, the world's best newspaper, would accuse someone of inciting mass murder just to sell their online division and just to further their brand of politics? Who indeed would believe such a thing? In conclusion, we will see if the judge dismisses Mrs. Palin's complaint and if the block on discovery is appealed by her legal team. If so, it will be a long process. I look forward to the journey, folks. That's the way I see it. Until next time, this is Darrell Kessel. Thanks for listening.